One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Back again, are we? Good. That means the last story didn't quite get to you. Not enough to make you stop listening, at least. Maybe you think you've gotten used to the things we talk about here. The shadows that linger, the voices that call from places long abandoned, the warnings that come just a little too late. But tell me something. Have you ever stopped to think about what gets left behind? Not just echoes of the dead. No, I'm talking about things that shouldn't still be here. Things that refuse to fade. Pictures, memories, remnants. Sometimes they hold more than just sentiment. Sometimes they hold something else. Tonight, we've got two stories for you, and they both ask a simple question. What remains when everything else is gone? The first tale is about a photograph. Just a picture, a family portrait. But as you'll see, some pictures don't just capture a moment. Sometimes they keep something trapped inside. This is a family portrait. Written by El Chan. Nothing I've learned prepared me for this. We've grown up in an age of reason where we can reduce everything into numbers. That which we cannot explain, we turn into myth. Whispers over campfires, blown up into cheap thrills on the big screen. We've glossed over our fears and the true nature of the world with explanations and tinsel. We never understand what's happening until it's too late. I can't explain what happened to us over the past month. I can't accept it. I can't live with the feeling I have as I sit here typing this all out. I can feel their eyes in the back of my neck as I sit at the desk and try to puzzle it all out. Or I already know, and my mind skitters away from the truth I feel deep in my bones and my gut. One day, I will fail, and I will join Sarah soon. But there's some time before that. Time enough to tell my story, whether you believe it or not. It was a month and a lifetime ago. The first time Sarah and I had gotten away for a real break since our honeymoon. Our lives had filled up with the hollow milestones of the corporate race. Chasing a promotion here, a client there, living from deadline to deadline. No time for children yet, although we were thinking about it. There were more silences than words between us. It felt good to be on the road, leaving our jobs behind for the first time in years. We followed the coast up to New England, Stephen King, and Lovecraft Country, never knowing where we'd rest our heads that night, or which fork in the road to take. It was on that trip when we wound up at a small bed and breakfast off the beaten path. I won't say where it is. I would happily go back there and burn it to the ground. Back then, it was magic. We felt alive again. The whitewashed facade broke the horizon with the pride of a tombstone. The owner was a dour and cadaverous man by the name of Bryce. Deep bags under his eyes betrayed his lack of sleep. He obviously had a fascination for history and the macabre. The walls were lined with rows of photographs, most yellow with age. As we wandered deeper down the corridor to our room, they lost the gloss and color of modern photography, reverting to the severe black and whites of yesteryear. Our room was decorated in a lavish Victorian style, a strange departure from the simple modern outlook of the rest of the house. The centerpiece of the room was a lush painting on the wall, a magnificent piece depicting a serene field with a young girl in a simple yellow frock sitting down to a picnic meal on the green. A forest in the background, dark and forbidding, provided contrast to the azure sky and the verdant meadow. Sarah squealed with delight at the find. She'd done an elective in art appreciation in college where we'd met. Our jobs had squeezed many small joys from our lives, like water from a dishcloth, but I think she missed the art the most. "Look at the work on this," she gushed, reverently bringing her fingertips, almost but not quite, to the painting. "It's so fine, you can barely see the brushstrokes. And the girl, she looks so sad." I examined the painting alongside her. It was indeed masterful. Strange that something so exquisite would find a home in this strange little house off the beaten trail. The frame bore a brass plaque, too corroded for me to read the inscription. I settled down to catch up with some reading for the evening. Sarah couldn't quite get enough of the painting. She must have spent hours staring at it, sometimes pulling me over to examine some minute detail, some trick of the brushwork. We only stayed there a single night, but it was one of the most restful nights we'd ever had. We were checking out the next morning when Sarah interjected as the owner was swiping my card. "How much for the painting in the room?" Bryce looked up. I expected him to look affronted or bemused. What I got instead was a look of heartfelt gratitude, his pale features lighting up with a crooked smile, the first I'd seen since we'd been at the inn. "You couldn't stop talking about it at breakfast, couldn't you?" Sarah nodded. "It's not good to me here anymore. It reminds me too much of my wife. There's still a little bit of her in that painting, I feel. If the painting really likes you that much, it would be better in your home than mine." I was puzzled by his choice of words. He was a strange man. Perhaps the words had come out garbled. "If the painting really likes you," he said. I was sure of it. He put another $50 on my card and helped load the painting into the car. He looked a decade younger in the rearview mirror as we drove off. The painting found its new home in our living room when we got back home. The first order of business was to clean up the corroded brass plaque at the base of the frame. The sharp tang of the solvent stung my nose as I scrubbed away at the green crust. It yielded, flake by flake, till the little metal rectangle gleamed. The family picture in the meadow, 1893. A family picnic? But with just a single girl? I stared at the small white figure again. The girl at the picnic wore a wide grin on her face. I was oddly discomforted by that queer smile. I took up my phone to examine photographs I'd taken of the painting back at the inn. It took a while to zoom in on the tiny figure on my phone. I had to hold my phone up to the painting to be sure. The girl hadn't been smiling back at the inn. Sarah brushed it off when I called her into the room. "A trick of the light," she said. "Angle and lighting could make all the difference when photographing paintings," she argued. I laughed it off, but I still gave the painting a second look as we left the room. I was hovering in that dark, restless space between exhaustion and slumber when I first felt the warm glow of the summer sun on my skin. A strange dream, to be feeling that instead of the crisp springtime chill of our bedroom. Soft grass pricked the skin of my forearms and palms, and the light scent of wildflowers tickled my nose. I came to with a start. I was back in my room, the sensation of the open field fading. I shook my head to clear the fog of sleep. I felt the emptiness on the other side of the bed before I saw it. The hollow left by my wife's sleeping form. It was still warm from the lingering body heat and the smell of summer. I hissed as my toes encountered the frigid parquet flooring. "Sarah!" I called into the darkness beyond the bedroom door. There was something there, at the edge of my hearing, something that I couldn't make out. I padded through the silent corridor. I got to the living room. Sarah was there, sitting on the floor, her nightgown gaping obscenely. I was shocked at the display. There was nothing sexual here. Instead, there was something far stranger. Her eyes were rolled back in her head, the whites glistening in the half-dark. Her mouth hung open in a parody of a smile. A string of drool dangled from her chin. Her long brown hair, caressed by the breeze, blew across her face. That broke the spell. The windows were shut. The air was still. There was no breeze in the living room. I looked up at the painting. The girl in the painting leered down at me. She was in the same position as Sarah. There was a whisper of cloth as Sarah got to her feet. I turned to see her make her way back up the corridor with all the broken grace of a marionette. I felt a crunch under my bare foot. There, in its pale juices staining the wooden floor, was a crushed wildflower. Sarah woke up refreshed the next morning. I fared less well. Sleep's embrace, when it finally came, was uncomfortable. The darkness behind my eyelids hid nameless horrors, and a smiling girl on a picnic blanket. I asked her if she'd slept well. She smiled and told me it was the best sleep she'd had in months. She half remembered a dream of talking to someone in a warm place. It was good that she was facing away, pottering at the sink when she said that. The morning sun had melted away the strangeness of the night before, but it all came rushing back with that simple affirmation. When Sarah had left for her day out with the girls, I poured myself a stiff drink and took it to the living room. It had been my favorite room in the house. There was no peace for me there anymore. From the second I stepped into the room, the hair in the back of my neck prickled. It was the damn painting. I felt that it was watching me, that she was watching me. No matter. The strange brass plaque and the shifting face of the girl in the painting had already unsettled me, but seeing my wife sprawled on the floor with that ghastly smile on her face was too much for me. I'd take the painting down, keep it in the garage for a bit. I would just tell Sarah that I had to take the painting down to clean it. Well, clean it up a bit more. I tried to lift the heavy frame off the nail on the wall. It wouldn't budge. I groped around the edge of the frame, trying to find the spot where the supporting wire hung off the nail in the wall. I tiptoed, trying to wedge my fingers further in between the fall and the frame. The strain bruised my muscles and my calves just before they gave out. I found it. Strangely, there didn't seem to be anything wrong with the wire. I gave it a gentle tug and gasped as a pain blossomed in the tip of my index finger. I stumbled backwards. The bang of the heavy frame on the floor echoed throughout the house like a gunshot. Some sharp edge on the nail on the wall had caught my finger and torn a flap of skin off. Bright crimson welled up and ran down to my knuckles. I got to my feet. Specks of blood dotted the floor. The trail led straight to the painting. The girl's features were marred by a scarlet smear where a big fat drop of blood had been flung onto the painting. Her wide smile took on a whole new dimension of eeriness under that red sheen. Hiding the painting was one thing, but ruining it was another thing altogether. I scurried to the kitchen and moistened a kitchen towel. The pain had settled into a dull ache. I rushed back to the living room. I knelt over the fallen painting. and stared back into the pristine, pale face of the girl. There was blood on the floor, there was blood on my hand, there was no blood on the painting. Only the ever-widening, mocking smile on her face. I fled the room, chased by the smell of flowers and the whisper of the summer breeze.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
I moved the painting to the floor of the study and told Sarah that I'd fix up something better for it to hang off. The decision didn't go down too well. We had our first fight in months over it. I won out in the end, only after pointing out that the heavy frame had started to bend the nail in the wall. The painting gave us no more trouble for a while after that. The respite was short-lived. It started up again, slowly, always at night, always unexpected. I'd be lying in my bed and I'd dream of the warmth of the summer sun or the feel of hot breeze on my toes poking out from the bottom of the blanket. I got a prescription for sleeping pills from the doctor. The chemical fog did little to chase away those alien sensations at night. The sense of violation, of invasion, was absolute. There was no rest for me in my own home. It grew worse. Once, I found a trail of dirt and blades of grass ending at the foot of our bed. Sarah was curled up in bed. Her deep breaths told me that she was sound asleep. I followed the trail, blade by crushed blade of grass, out of our room. I left the comfort of my room, already knowing full well where the trail led. The air in the study was hot. The smell of the field magnified into a greenhouse reek. Beads of sweat appeared on my brow. The smiling girl was there, as always, staring at me. There was something mocking, something mesmerizing about those dark eyes. The artist had painted them with a dark humor, so realistic that it was like looking at a photograph. The flickering moonlight cast her pale face into shadow one moment, and silvery illumination the next. The shifting light softened the lines of the painting. The breeze seemed to stir the long grass. I thought I saw the clouds drift across the clear blue sky. I leaned closer, taken in by this new illusion. My forearm brushed against the weave of the canvas, and then pain. I looked down at my forearm. A small line of blood welled up from a scratch. I reeled back in horror from the painting. The girl wasn't in her relaxed pose. She had stepped a little closer. One sharp fingernail extended. Her face, much bigger now, bore the same wide grin she always had. Sarah refused to believe me the next morning. She laughed it off, saying she'd had sleepwalking episodes as a child and must have wandered out of the house and into the yard. She would hear nothing more about haunted paintings and the like. Occam's razor sliced away at my doubts. The simpler explanation was the better of the two. The one that did not peel back the comforting skin the world wore. Everything could be rationalized. The nocturnal wanderings, my obsession, with the painting spilling over into dreams, the light playing tricks in my eyes. Maybe she was just toying with us. It took a little over a fortnight. Sarah's nightly escapades had gotten more frequent. I grew accustomed to her wanderings, the strange smells, and the alien sensations. Strange that even such little horrors could be acclimatized to after a while. But that last night was different. I woke with a start. Sarah wasn't there. Something had woken me, a sound, coming from the living room. It was a low, wordless melody. Someone was singing. I got up off the bed. As I stood up, the hot breeze seared my face. No, something was twisting my senses. I was in my room. I was in the middle of spring. The air was still. I stole down the corridor. I'd feel the worn parquet floor one second, and the tickle of blades of grass the next. The singing grew louder. I had one thing to check first. A suspicion at the back of my mind. I stepped into the study. I flicked the light on. For a moment, I blinked away the harsh glare of the afternoon sun. And then it was gone, replaced by the soft glow of the ceiling lamp. The painting was still there, but there was something different. I could only stand there and gape as my mind struggled to process what my eyes were telling me. The girl wasn't in the painting. She wasn't in the painting. Sarah. I had to find her. The living room. The singing. The yards felt like miles. I got to the end of the corridor. Sarah was sitting on the floor, her back towards me. She wore a light sundress, perfect for a day out in the park. The moonlight through the windows gave the room an unearthly glow. She was not alone. She was hunched over something. A pair of stick-thin legs poked out from under her right arm. A painfully skinny arm was hooked around her shoulder. The sharp nails scourged her bare back. Fine, bloody lines stood out on her pale skin. I shuddered and looked at the scratch on my own forearm. I strode over to the light switch and flicked it on. For a second, I lost sight of Sarah and that thing. Just a second. When the light came on, it was gone. Sarah and I were alone. I called out to my wife. Nothing. Just that same wordless lullaby. The bumps on her vertebrae clear against her pale skin as she rocked back and forth. I called out again as I slowly stepped forward. Her expression was empty, her mouth slack and open, her lips working to force out that nameless tune. The worst was not on her face, but her dress. A strap hung halfway down her shoulder, one small breast exposed. Around that perfectly shaped breast, I could count the individual crescent tooth marks, leaking blood. I left Sarah in the living room. I was going to end this. There was something unholy about that painting, and I was not going to stop until it was ash on my porch. The girl was back where she belonged, sitting on the green meadow. Her lips were ringed with red, running down to her chin. All I needed was some lighter fluid out of the garage and a box of matches. I lifted the heavy frame off the floor and was just about to back out of the room when Sarah barreled into me. She clawed and shrieked like a thing possessed, her nails scrabbling at my chest. She was a waifish 100 pounds, but her frenzied assault brought me to my knees. She managed to wrestle the painting away from me. The sharp edge of the frame caught me flush in my chin, and my entire world went white. I sat up. The merciless sun beat down from overhead. Hidden cicadas lent their voices to a dull chorus. The smell of flowers was overpowering. In front of me, the girl from the painting and Sarah. A mouth-watering picnic spread lay on the ground in front of us. It was a feast. Fruit, sandwiches, all laid out on fine china. There's still something wrong with this tableau. Like one of those toy holograms from my youth, were the two pictures that were in front of me. The first, the scene from the painting with the young girl on the picnic spread. The second, something out of a nightmare. The girl was a caricature of a human being, taut dry skin stretched over bones. It smiled at me. Sarah just sat there catatonic. The girl leaned forward and picked up a strawberry from the basket of fruit. That strange glimpse from the corner of my eye again. Its pale fingers stuffed the plump fruit into Sarah's mouth. No. I looked again. The strawberry was rancid. darkened patches starting to liquefy. The smell made me gag. When the girl opened her mouth, Sarah's voice came out. "You're finally here," it said. "Dreaming all this. Sarah's been dreaming you all this time." "Or it could be dreaming you," it asked back, smiling with perfect white teeth. No, the teeth were jagged and yellow, poking out from blackened gums. She stuffed another strawberry into Sarah's mouth. I couldn't move my body. I was stuck, watching this slow torture, this thing slowly choking my wife. Sarah's eyes bulged as she struggled for breath. It turned to face me. "It's a family portrait. It always needs a family. My family never stays long. Won't you stay too? This one's mine already. We can be so happy together. Such things I can show you." The reddish juice from the strawberries dripped down Sarah's chin, and she began to gag, her throat constricting. I strained, but my muscles would not obey me. There was nothing worse than to be so utterly helpless. Sarah's eyes locked on mine. "Help me," they said. "Please help." The girl paused in her ministrations for a moment, leaning across the picnic basket towards me. She stroked the side of my paralyzed face with soft fingers and gave me a small smile. Somewhere else, that skinny monstrosity leered at me, raking down my cheek with needle-sharp nails. Sarah's voice issued from those cracked lips once more. "You're going to go now. I can't keep you, but you'll be back. Don't fight it. We'll be one happy family." She got closer and kissed me full on the lips. Just as she pulled back, she got the edge of my lip with those rotten teeth. There was a sting as she bit down hard, and when she sat back down next to my wife, there was a smear of blood around her lips. She waved as the world went white. When I came to, Sarah was on the floor next to me. Her eyes had rolled back in her head, and she was shaking like a leaf in the wind. There was a thin line of blood down her chin, exactly like the juice from the fruit earlier. I took one last look at the smiling girl and the painting before I left. It wasn't the same painting we'd brought home. I saw it as it was. The grass, brown and wilted as far as the eye could see, bones strewn in the field, bleached white by the harsh sun. The sky, blood red, and the girl, a horror of skin and bones grinning wildly. I could still see my blood on her lips. I scooped Sarah up and left our house. It was an aneurysm, the doctors said. Somewhere along the highways and byways within Sarah's brain, there was a little loop of traffic, a small loop where things didn't flow as planned. And one day, nobody knows why it was that day, not some other, there was an accident. It was so easy to explain after the fact. Sarah's strange behavior. She had a seizure when the blood vessel burst. I got up, and in my haste to rush her to the hospital, I'd run into something in those bad moments. I'd blacked out and hallucinated the encounter. So deceptively easy to believe, because it fit in the system of the world, the ordered lie we pretend to believe. It all came crashing down soon enough. After a week living out of an overnight bag at the hospital, I was finally evicted by her parents and forced to go home to get some proper rest. The first thing that caught my eye was that cursed painting. I felt the reality of the past few weeks come crashing down on me. The feeling of it drove me to my knees. I pulled myself to my feet, suddenly unable to breathe. I wasn't sure if I'd ever see Sarah again as she was, but I sure as hell wasn't going to let that painting spend another minute in my house. I was hoisting it off the floor when something caught my eye. There in the meadow, basking in the bright summer sun, was Sarah. Sarah, my beautiful wife, captured in paint on a canvas more than 100 years old. Her features were unmistakable. I'd woken up next to that face for more than half a decade, and I recognized it now, even through the haze of tears. And the girl in yellow, sitting there with her arm around my wife's slim shoulders, smiling at me. That's the end of what I have to write. I fear sleep now, fear that one day I'll wake up back in that meadow with Sarah and the girl. Fear that I'd be back there, helpless to help Sarah. Fear, most of all, that whatever was left in the painting wasn't going to be my wife anymore. That even if I found a way to get her back, and that shell in the hospital bed with the tubes and wires and pumps opened its eyes again, it wouldn't be Sarah. Who had Bryce lost to the painting? I'll never know. How long had he watched and waited and dreamt in that New England inn? I remember the look on his face when we drove off. Freedom. I have to stop. The painting is still there, and the weight of the stares of the two of them is too much for me. Before I go to bed, I touch a shaky finger to the painted face of my wife. I raise it back to my own lips to kiss her goodnight. There's a slight aftertaste to that kiss. Not the dust coating the painting or the chemical tang of paint. Something different. Something slightly salty. The taste of tears.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
And that, my friends, was A Family Portrait by L. Chan. A picture's worth a thousand words, they say, but sometimes it's worth a whole lot more than that. Sometimes a picture keeps something waiting, something looking for a way out. Ever find an old photograph of people you don't recognize? People who shouldn't be there. Maybe a face that wasn't supposed to be in the frame at all. Next time you do, maybe don't look too close. You might not like what's looking back. Now, don't get too comfortable. Our next story is something different. It's not about pictures or memories. It's about the living and those who watch them. You see, not everyone who watches over you wants to keep you safe. Some are waiting for something else entirely. This is Suicide Watch, written by E. Matthews. The light shining through the window burns my eyes, even though it's muted by the clouds. It's almost like a spotlight shining straight on my face. I hear the rustling of trees and the faint, soothing melody of rain on the glass. I don't know why I love the rain so much. I guess it was the only sound in the house I could listen to when my dad was beating my mother. Her screams still echo in my head. The inescapable sound of his repeated strikes still seemed to reverberate through the halls and off the hardwood. They found me with a rope around my neck and had me committed to Hillcrest, the local crazy house. I'm under suicide watch, which is not exactly the place to be on a Saturday. To be honest, I'd rather be dead, but look how that went. Can't always get what you want. Orderlies keep shuffling by as if something is going on down the hall in Sophie's room. I leave my bed and make my way to the door, hearing more and more nurses and patients moving around in the hall. I hear them being reassured that nothing's happening, but I see through their comforting lie. I can tell something bad has happened, so I poked my head out and looked. If nothing were going on, there would not be 7 people huddled outside of Sophie's door. I see one nurse in tears. I recognize her. She's the redhead who spent a lot of time with Sophie. I always liked that nurse. She was pretty, and not to be that guy, but damn, she could be a model. That aside, the redhead was a little more patient than the other nurses. Sophie was an especially difficult case, as any schizophrenic would be. It took more than a calm smile, a stupid puzzle, or a game of checkers to take care of her. I imagine that the two were friends on the outside, maybe even family. As I step out into the hall, a male nurse looks at me and points back behind me, silently demanding that I step back into my room. But this isn't a dictatorship, and I'll take a fork in the ass before I take orders from a nurse. "Back to your room, Bobby," she finally demands after enduring the coldest stare I could produce with my thick eyebrows. "It's Robbie," I replied, although I'm not sure she knows the difference. He doesn't seem too bright to me. "Listen," he steps closer to me, an admonishing look on his smug face. "It's important that you just stay in your room for now. We need to take care of something." I ponder this for a moment as his gaze shifts from that of an authoritarian to one of actual concern, perhaps even regret. I know if I say what I'm about to say too loudly, it could cause a panic. I'm sad, but not crazy. I can hold it together. So, out of consideration for the other patients, I lean in a little closer and speak quietly. "Sophie's dead, isn't she?" The look on his face expresses both anguish and discomfort at the same time. I'm not stupid. If people crowd around a live patient, it would cause a lot of problems. It could overwhelm them, scare them, or cause their paranoia to intensify, culminating in a violent fit. No, Sophie couldn't handle that many people at one time. She was dead. The male nurse retreats with a sad look on his face and just walks away. He can't protect me from anything, not when I can figure it out on my own. He knows I'm not a gossip, either. I keep it to myself, mostly. I can't help but smile at him as he turns his back to me. Feels like a victory. Like a triumph over an enemy. I understand why he's trying to contain me at first. What they should have done was put Sophie in a body bag on a gurney. They should have taken Sophie away before it caused a fuss. I don't know why they didn't. I walk towards Sophie's room. Schizophrenia aside, she was a sweet girl. Sophie was young. She was maybe 19, 3 years older than me. I remember a conversation I once tried to have with her about the economy. Had so many solutions and ideas. She didn't quite understand, so she changed the subject and started talking about cats. I wouldn't exactly call her my friend, but my stomach is still sick as I approached the door. It's a decision I regret immediately. I turn away from the disgusting mess and Ralph all over one of the nurse's scrubs. The redhead grabs me gently by my shoulders and moves me away. In any other situation, I would have pulled away from her grasp, but I wanted to leave this time. I only stared at it for a few seconds, and I know that the image will never leave me. It was like she exploded or turned inside out. Sophie's walls and ceiling dripped with blood and chunks of flesh. Her intestines were roped around the room loosely, and her heart is in the hand of her skeleton. The pictures of cats on her wall are coated in gore, and peeling off, and her skin's just gone. I understand now why they haven't done anything yet. They have no idea what to do. None of this makes sense. How could someone do this, and so quietly? Isn't it impossible? It takes a few minutes before I stop vomiting. I never imagined that this would be why the redhead nurse and I would be alone in the bathroom. It is sickening to even think about the fact that the mess in here was once a person. Sophie was a girl who loved cats. She loved drawing with markers and crayons like a kid. I look up from the toilet, my face red, veins bulging from my forehead, and my face is dripping with snot and drool. I sit on the floor. The nurse is to my left with her hand on my shoulder. Her name tag, with a picture of her face, says her name's Melissa Wolf. I wipe my face on the sleeves of my white shirt and hang my head. Are you all right, Robbie? She asked me that, of all things. No, I reply sharply. My voice is nearly gone, but with what's left of it, I continue. I don't know what to make of it. The image plays through my head more and more, getting brighter, more vivid every time I blink. I see Sophie's shredded remains strewn everywhere in the room. Needless to say, I can't sleep tonight. Not without meds, anyway. Melissa, the red-headed nurse, and gave me some pills before bed. I don't know what they were, and I didn't care. I just threw them down my throat and shut up about it. As I lay here, hours after Melissa's gone, I hear a scratching sound coming from right outside my door. I jump my bed and slam back to the wall. I shout, cursing whatever's on the other side of the door. Slowly, I slide down the wall and sit with my head and my knees shaking in what? Fear? No, I think it's anger. I'm angry at whatever took Sophie. I'm angry at the fact that I ever survived the noose. I can't help but think, maybe I never wanted to die. Maybe I just wanted revenge. I transition from the floor to my feet and ferociously open the door to find a cat. Just a cat. It's small and black, looking at me with its eyes half closed. Its tail sways left and right a couple of times. It meows and runs down the hall in the direction opposite of Sophie's room. I step into the hall for the first time since the incident. I look to my left towards Sophie's room and hang my head in despair. After a moment of silence, I turn right and see the cat scratch at another door and look back at me. So I walk towards it. The door that the cat's scratching on provides access to a stairwell. It leads down to the basement where the laundry room is, or so I've heard. As I pass the front desk, heading to the door, I have an eerie feeling. The place is empty. The nurses are gone. Usually they have at least a few on staff at all times. Where are they? Moving slowly, constantly looking around me for any sign of people, I reach the door. The cat scratches at it one more time, then backs up to let me through. So I open it, and we head down into the basement. We go down a flight of stairs through the laundry room into what looks like a secondary infirmary. Is this normal? I don't know much about hospitals, but they usually keep their patients above ground. This place is really clean. It's stocked with medicine and new equipment. I look to my left and see the cat perched atop a table. Beside it's a document inside a file folder. I imagine that's why this cat's here. It's signaling and guiding me. I have no clue how it was possible, but I imagine I may find answers if I keep moving. So I grab the file and open it. It's Sophie's patient file. It has her full name, Sophie Ann Bishop. It says that she was a paranoid schizophrenic. Then it says the impossible. Cause of death. Suicide. Whatever happened to Sophie, it clearly was not suicide. Nobody rips their own heart out of their chest, wraps their entrails around the room and self-destructs. Something is wrong here. Very wrong. I noticed the cat leaped from the table and jumped to a counter. Next to the sink, taped to a cabinet door, is a letter of some sort. It has the name of the hospital and their logo at the top. It's signed by Dr. Bill Marcus. I know Dr. Marcus. He's a good man. He seems very caring and always makes jokes to lighten the mood. I grab the note from the cabinet door and read it quietly to myself. These incompetent nurses here at Hillcrest Mental Facility have absolutely no regard for a procedure. They become emotionally involved with the patients, and in the face of certain events, have no clue as to how they should react. They're not here to be their friends. They're here because the patients are sick. They can't handle the real world safely. The nurses treat them like real people. It's just wrong. The other day I spoke with a spiky-haired young woman with a near-erotic obsession with burning things. He says fire is essential to existence and loves to spread it in order to pay proper respect to the illuminating wonder that is fire. He worships fire like it's Baal. I can assure you none of these people are capable of any normal way of thinking. So I've subjected them to a new medication intended to alter their behavior. The drug remains to be named, but after the successes that we've had with a paranoid schizophrenic named Sophie, I firmly believe that this new medication is a real game-changer. Even our most violent and resilient subjects have become like doorstops. The human trials have been a complete success, and I will be secretly using the drug on half of the people within the facility. What the hell? I can hardly breathe. It feels like I've been punched right in the stomach. We're not people at Hillcrest. We're experiments. As I considered the letter for a moment, I recalled Tom, the spiky-haired young man that the doctor referred to. Tom was an arsonist, and a good one at that. He and I recently had a discussion about fire. Dr. Marcus was right. He practically worshipped the stuff. Tom's brothers snuck in some matches for me once so I could smoke. I don't know though they got them through security, but I don't think I'd like the answer. I put the cigarette in my mouth. I'm shaking so hard I can barely light the damn thing. For whatever reason, I'm afraid that I've taken the drug. I don't feel docile. I never was easily manageable anyway. I feel like if I see Dr. Marcus right now, I'll tear him a new one. We're experiments. We're nothing but experiments. Then I hear a loud stomping. I hear the rattle of thick, heavy chains and a faint groaning. Something big is heading my way. I put out the cigarette on my tongue and swallow it. I can't leave any real trace of me being here, and you can definitely smell the smoke. It's the most disgusting thing I've ever done, but I'd do it again. I hide in a small cabinet and close the door most of the way. I only leave a small crack to see out of. I have no idea where the cat is. The chains, the heavy stomping of feet, they get closer, closer and closer still until I can finally see him. It's a large man wrapped in gauze. He has large chains in his hands and around his shoulders. His face is riddled with stitches. His eyes are black and sharp-like, lacking any trace of humanity. I can tell that this man has no soul. As he looks around, I can see he has no nose. I'd call that dumb luck. Eventually, after flipping over some tables and breaking everything at eye level, he turns and leaves. I wait until I can no longer hear him. I then slowly open the door and exit the cabinet. I'm curious about what's going on in this hospital. Something is very wrong, and I know I have to leave. My curiosity gets the better of me. I search around to find the cat, but it's gone. I look around. Behind a broken glass cabinet, I notice an opening. It's a secret passageway. I push the cabinet the best I can. There's just enough room to squeeze into the opening. I shuffle through the glass and broken metal, getting shards caught in my slippers. Then the lights go out. I move faster, and in my panic I trip, falling into what feels like a cavern of some kind. When I finally land, I feel a sharp pain as something punctures my left side. I feel it with my hand. It's a bone. It's not one of mine, though. I pull it out and feel blood trickle down my waist. It isn't a very deep wound, but it hurts. I need to see how bad it is. So I take out my matches again and light one. I pull up my shirt to reveal the wound. I'm revealed to see it's just a bad scratch. When I look up, I am stunned. Frozen in fear, I stare Sophie in the face. And she's like a ghost with lifeless eyes rimmed in black. Her pupils are tiny. Where her eyes once have been green, they are now without color. Her face is more pallid than I recall. There is no doubt in my mind, this is Sophie's specter. Her mouth seems to be dripping thin green ooze. The only things I recognize are her dark hair and the marks on her forehead from her habit of slamming her face into walls. She lifts her hand. She's holding 5 white pills, and slowly she looks down away from me. Her hand edges its way to my face. I try, but I'm unable to speak. For whatever reasons, she wants me to take these pills. I summon the courage to smack her hand away. As I do, I fall backwards into a pile of human bones and skulls. I freak and clumsily fumble about trying to stand. When I'm on my feet, she's once again right in front of me. This time, she's right in my face. She tries to push the drugs in my mouth. I cry a little as I yell at her. No, I won't become like you. I have to stay alive. The words stop me. I step back, still crying at the realization. I never wanted to die. I just wanted a different life. Maybe even a second chance. A fresh start someplace far from here. Her ghost fades in the foggy flurry as large chains wrap around my neck and pull me down, flat on my face. I slam my head hard. I feel my cheekbone crack and my eye socket crumble a little. My nose gushes as I put one hand on the ground and try to stand. The chains pull again, and I'm flung forward toward the large man I avoided in the infirmary. He grabs my throat over the chains and lifts me in the air. I kick at my feet as I lose consciousness.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
I come to in a metal chair to discover that I'm restrained by leather straps. I cannot see out of my right eye, I cannot smell anything, or hear out of my right ear. My vision's blurry and my entire body is numb. My legs are numb and unresponsive. My heart speeds up as I hear lighter footsteps to my left. I hear a medical tray swinging up next to me. When I hear the frightening warm laughter, I know who it is. Dr. Marcus? I ask, quietly trying not to choke on the blood in my mouth. Well, he replies, look at you. Had a nice trip, I see. Sorry about the big guy. He can play a bit rough sometimes. What he did to that Sophie girl, that was just a bit much, wasn't it? Why are you doing this? Simple, kid. He moves the tray in front of me, and I see an eye in the jar. I just know it's mine. You see, no pun intended, he continues, the people here aren't real people. They don't have real emotions, and nobody really cares about them. Most of our patients get dumped here and left to rot. No visitors, no friends, no family. They have nobody. I have an opportunity to be an innovator. I can forever alter the way these medical proceedings are executed. I can change the world. And you, he grabs a scalpel from the tray, plays with it in his hand and sets it back down. I try to wriggle out of the chair, but I appear to be paralyzed. I'm helpless. Then he laughs with such malice, he may as well be Satan himself. We were all blind to it. I scream as he grabs a large pair of scissors. You tried to leave this world. I studied your file. You tried to hang yourself, but Mommy forgot her keys. You don't deserve this world, you crybaby. No one would be surprised if you, well, I don't know, snuck out for a smoke and jumped in front of a truck. Why can't I move? What have you done to me? Well, for starters, I removed your legs. He cuts something with the scissors. As his hand comes into sight, I can see he's taken a few of my fingers. And then there are these. He laughs once more, but much louder. Fear burns in me. If I wasn't sedated, I still wouldn't be able to move. I can tell that my head's strapped down as well. It almost makes sense to me now. I could never get inside of his head enough to understand why he's doing this. Still, it all falls into a place. Unfortunately, I can't do nothing. I watch in silence as he tears my body apart. He hacks my remaining fingers and then an entire hand. It's almost like he wants to create more monsters like the freak that killed Sophie. I understand now why Sophie wanted me to take the pills. They would have killed me. It was a courtesy. But now I'm doomed to be like the large man with all the stitches. Marcus will use the medicine to control me. And I won't care. I'm nobody. I was just going to die anyway. And that was Suicide Watch by E. Matthews. You ever wonder who's really watching you? Who's waiting for the moment you let your guard down? Some people think being watched is a sign of protection. Others, well, they know better. There are things in this world that wait. They watch, they linger, they stay. And when the time is right, when they see the cracks forming, they slip right in. Just because someone or something is watching you doesn't mean they want to keep you safe. So there you have it. Two stories, two warnings. One about what gets trapped in an old photograph, and one about the kind of attention you never want to have. Now, as always, it's up to you. Maybe these are just stories, just words on a page. Or maybe, just maybe, there's more truth in them than you'd like to believe. Either way, sleep tight, my friends. And if you ever feel like someone's watching you, maybe don't turn around. Sweet dreams, campers. See you next week.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free, select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one-coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Rebate in form of Visa gift card equal to 100% off the second eligible item purchased before or after applicable discounts, if any. See details. Offer ends 7/9.